Kami again. District 14, IAS 19, paper number 5.
Agenda paper 5. The interpretation committee discussed this issue at its May meeting, and the staff reported this issue to the IASB members in informal meetings. Some IASB members thought that the entity does not have an asset because the entity does not have control over the surplus, insofar as the trustee can prevent the entity's access to the surplus by using the surplus to enhance the benefit. At its July meeting, the interpretation committee considered this informal feedback from the ISB members and discussed this matter further. At the July meeting, the interpretation committee noted the difficulty associated with assessing the consequences of the trustee's future actions and their effect on the entity's ability to estimate reliably the amount to be received by the entity. Consequently, a majority of the interpretation committee members observed that no asset should be recognized in these circumstances. However, some interpretation committee members were concerned about the consequences that this conclusion could have on the accounting for a minimum funding requirement and about the consistency of this decision with the recognition and measurement requirement of IAS 19. In this agenda paper, we analyzed these points and noted that there would be no fundamental conflicts between the interpretation committee's conclusion at its July 2014 meeting and the requirement of IAS 19. This is because the step for assessing the asset ceiling is separate from the step to determine a surplus under IAS 19. We also noted that the conclusion should be also applied when a minimum funding requirement exists. We thought that the trustee's power to wind up a plan through buying an annuity is not the same as the trustee's right to use a surplus. However, we thought that an entity's ability to realize an economic benefit through a gradual settlement is restricted if a trustee can decide at any time to wind up a plan. As analyzed in paragraphs 29 and 33 to 35 of this paper, we think the trustee's unilateral power to buy annuities is different from the power to wind up a plan and is not enough to affect the asset ceiling by itself. Consistently with the tentative decision at the July meeting and the staff analysis of this paper, we suggest amending IFRIC 14 as proposed in Appendix C. In the basis for conclusion, we suggest to describe the points noted in the staff analysis as summarized in the section on the staff conclusions of this paper. We recommend proposing an amendment to IFRIC 14 that would be separate from annual improvements. We would like to ask whether the committee agrees with the staff analysis and recommendation. Thank you.
Comments? Going once, going twice, going to the phones. Too late, Andrew. Too late, all of you. We'll start with Sandy.
I don't have any comments. I agree with the staff's conclusion.
Okay, Martin?
Same with me.
Fei Long?
I don't have much. I don't have time to look at it in detail yet.
Okay, we'll put you down as abstaining then. Fair enough. Okay, I've got Andy, Tony, Kaz, Reinhardt.
Yeah, I think it's very much going in the right direction. I think that the previous proposal was to take account of the trustees' powers as a measurement issue, which I felt had significant operational challenges. This is in effect saying it's a recognition issue, which is, I think, the right way to go and much more operational. I've got some minor drafting suggestions I can send in offline. One thing I was a bit confused on in the paper, and I haven't spent a lot of time going through different scenarios and analysis here. Paragraph 56 of the paper says it's important to remember our discussion relates to a closed plan with no future accrual. The amendments, I believe, would not just affect closed plans, though.
Please, Cammy. No, you're already on. You turn.
Okay. I think in the current Article 14, it is very clear an entity can recognize an asset if economic benefits are available through reduction in future contributions.
Yes.
But if not, of course, they need to rely on a refund. So this is what we are analyzing. But I think you are right.
Yeah, so Andrew, you're right. The proposed amendment wouldn't only apply to closed plans, it would apply generally.
And depending on what the read across is into these kind of availability language in the context of minimum funding requirements, would this potentially result in a liability for MFRs being recognised in a broader range of circumstances? I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but I just want to understand whether that is an outcome or a potential outcome.
It is.
Right.
Tony?
I just have a question for the staff about how this gets articulated. I agree with a lot of what's written in the staff paper. Where I still have, I guess, a residual level of discomfort is that this would say you don't get to recognise the surplus in a situation in which the trustees can, for example, enhance the benefits. You would get to recognise the surplus if the trustees could make an investment decision that would use up the surplus. So then I feel we have a very fine line between saying, well, I'm going to make the members better off, maybe by increasing the level of benefit, or I'll make them better off by increasing their security by coming out of equities and going into annuities. Don't need to settle. You could have the annuities as being an investment in the plan as a plan asset. That would arguably make the members better off by providing them with greater security, but it would use up the surplus because typically the fair value of annuity is going to be less than the fair value of the assets you have to spend to buy it. And I just, where I have a residual discomfort is that I'm not sure I can see the conceptual difference between the two. And I just wonder if that's something that you've thought about and whether this is effectively a rule rather than something where there's a conceptual difference.
I would say that I think the consequence of those two actions does take you to the same place. So I agree with you on that. I think, though, where you're enhancing the benefits, though, you are changing the pension promise. And that's how I would distinguish between the two. When you're buying annuities, then you're not changing the pension promise. And so that's how I would distinguish between those two circumstances.
I think what will be important is the way that you articulate that in the basis for conclusions, so that we've all got something in mind as we're talking about it now. But as people take this away to interpret it, I think it's important to be very clear about how you're drawing that distinction.
Fair point.
And I just have some clarification to the words here, just along those lines, that I will send off to Acme.
John?
Yeah, I had a similar point to Tony. I was sort of struggling about the difference between enhancing the benefits and purchasing the annuities. I could see a difference between enhancing the benefits and the gradual settlement, because you don't have access. The employer doesn't have access to refund through gradual settlement if the trustee has the power to basically wind up the plan, because gradual settlement is within the power of the trustee. I'm still concerned that we're really mixing up recognition and measurement issues in relation to this asset, and we're actually saying, well, we're uncomfortable that the right might be measured at some amount when actually the trustee could effectively spend the surplus. And I think the way Michael explained that you've changed the promise is, if the trustee has the power to change the promise, that affects the recognition of the right rather than the measurement. That seems to me to be a better explanation than the way it's articulated in the paper.
Again, fair point. Cass?
I basically support the staff direction to amend this standard. But I just want to make one clarification. Maybe you talk about natural reversal. If you look at the illustrative examples A3, so I think the plan asset have a fair value, but because of the asset ceiling, just reduce the value, and then the trustee changed revised the benefits and increased the defined benefit, then the difference we can recognize it as a past service cost, which is a P&L. But on the other hand, asset side, even the effect of that asset ceiling, you need to release it to match up that defined benefit plan. So in that, asset did change, it will be recognized as a OCI rather than P&L. So I think you're saying this as a natural reversal, which is something I'm not sure the right term, but knowing, I feel that's uncomfortable if the trustee decides to enhance the benefit and the company needs to recognize P&L loss, but ends up as a result of that asset ceiling release, net assets didn't change because OCI release and then through the OCI that return will be recovered, retained earnings are recovered. So this is I'm feel uncomfortable, but this uncomfortable is resides still from the IS 19, knowing that. I'm not sure whether we can resolve this, but understanding this uncomfortableness, I have to agree with this move forward.
Reinhardt.
I generally agree with the staff analysis and also agree that to publish the amendment as an amendment to IFRIC 14, separate from the annual improvement. I had a similar comment to comments others have made, the comment that Kaz made in terms of the calculation of the gain on settlement. I think the consequence of that is that you're effectively recycling something from OCI to income, and it might be worth, although I understand that logic, it might be worth mentioning that in the basis for conclusions. And then similarly to the comments I think Tony and others have made about the ability to make an investment decision, I understand the logic behind that. I think it would be very helpful to explain that in the basis for conclusions, but also perhaps I think in the actual wording of the amendment itself in paragraph 13, because when I read paragraph 13 proposed amendment, it didn't clearly distinguish or help people make sure they distinguish between the trustee right to invest assets versus the trustee's right to wind up the plan.
I think I'd already taken what I will call the Michael amendment as a given. Tony and then John.
Yeah, I just on the accounting for the settlement, I agree it would be helpful to be explicit. I'm probably not in quite the same place as Reinhardt. I don't think it's recycling anything. I think it's accounting for what is a settlement loss as defined in the standard and accounting for the impact of the asset ceiling as defined in the standard. I think they are two very different things. But I do think I completely agree with where the staff got to. And I think that will be helpful for that to be drawn out specifically.
John?
Yeah, I was going to say I completely agree with where the staff got to. There is some diversity in practice on that issue where people would put in place the effect of the asset ceiling through OCI and then not recognize any gain or loss on settlement on the basis that the asset's already been reduced. And I actually think they're separate accounting. One flows from IAS 19 and one flows from the application of the asset ceiling. So I agree completely what the staff says here, but I think it could well serve to be clarified.
Okay. I've already heard from the phones. Those in favor of the staff recommendation as enhanced slash amended? Show of hands.
Ten in the room.
All three of those on the phone are Faylong abstained, Martin and Sandy supported. Any change in views?
No.
Evidently not. Okay. Motion carries. We're some ahead of schedule. I'd like to propose that we take the break now. During the break, Michael and I are going to see if there's anything we